Welcome to the Living Alliance. This is all. Today is Monday, August 24th, 2026. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening in on Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us live by phone, app, or browser. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of the website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Consider taking our 90-hour court access in the common law course. You can find the link on our front page and in the description below. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right side of our website. You can also join our Bible studies. We have them every Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time right here in the Start meeting room. Okay, we're going to get started with our scripture reading. Last couple of weeks, we've been reading on the Sermon on the Mount, and we read chapter 5, chapter 6, and tonight is the final chapter for the Sermon on the Mount. It's chapter 7. It's in Matthew, chapter 7, and it's being read by Alexander Scorby. So, Sermon on the Mount, chapter 7, read by Alexander Scorby, Matthew, chapter 7.
Chapter 7. Judge not that ye be not judged. For with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged, and with what measure ye meet, it shall be measured to you again. And why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Or how wilt thou say to thy brother, Let me pull out the mote out of thine eye? And behold, a beam is in thine own eye. Thou hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of thine own eye, and then shalt thou see clearly to cast out the mote out of thy brother's eye. Give not that which is holy unto the dogs, neither cast ye your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet, and turn again and rend you. Ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. For every one that asketh receiveth, and he that seeketh findeth, and to him that knocketh it shall be opened. Or what man is there of you, whom if his son ask bread, will he give him a stone? Or if he ask a fish, will he give him a serpent? If ye then, being evil, know how to give good things unto your children, how much more shall your Father which is in heaven give good things to them that ask him? Therefore, all things whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them. For this is the law and the prophets. Enter ye in at the strait gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be which go in thereat. Because strait is the gate, and narrow is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it. Beware of false prophets which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. Ye shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes of thorns, or figs of thistles? Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that bringeth not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. Wherefore, by their fruits ye shall know them. Not every one that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name, and in thy name have cast out devils, and in thy name done many wonderful works? And then will I profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity. Therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man which built his house upon a rock. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat upon that house, and it fell not, for it was founded upon a rock. And everyone that heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them not shall be likened unto a foolish man which built his house upon the sand. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat upon that house, and it fell. And great was the fall of it. And it came to pass, when Jesus had ended these sayings, the people were astonished at his doctrine. For he taught them as one having authority, and not as the scribes.
Okay, Jan, do we have any questions or announcements tonight?
Yes, we have several questions tonight, John. The first one is on charter cities. And it says, our small town, being corrupt as it is, wants to put it to vote on becoming a charter city. I believe if it happens, it opens the door to more corruption and less voice for the people. I'd like to know John's opinion on these charter cities.
Well, your thoughts are absolutely correct from my perspective, absolutely. You know, every county, I heard there's a couple of counties that have not done this, but in any event, other than those few counties, every county in the United States has incorporated. And when you're talking about a charter, you're talking about a corporation or some kind of an organization, either a trust or a corporation. One of the dangers we're facing right now is corporatism, because that's what's being built and has been being built for quite some time. Matter of fact, it goes all the way back to 1871, is it? I think it's 1871, the Organic Act of 1871. I think that was. And, you know, that really was the beginning of building, turned really the United States of America into a corporation. Okay, and then they started to work on the counties, they worked on cities. Your city may already be a corporation, or it's a town or a village. I don't know how, if they've been incorporated, they might have been too. So yeah, it's not something you want to do. We have a government, that it's a natural law government, it's supposed to be a natural law government, and that's what we have. Maybe tonight's conversations, maybe we'll lead into a little more on that subject. I don't know. We'll see. Next question.
Okay, the next question is, what is a notice? I'd like to talk about notice. The law common, do I, and common law. What, if any, is the difference? Somebody once told me they read a footnote in a Supreme Court case, and they could not remember the case, that said, notice is no tice. And tice comes from a French root meaning to set on fire. So a notice is no set on fire. Or I'm letting you know of an issue that I am going to do something about. The closest thing I found was an entry in Wiktionary, which I do not view as a credible source.
Yeah, well, again, you know, it's interesting, the word fire, there may be some relationship there. You know, generally speaking, in judicial terms, okay, a notice ultimately is a summons, a notice of a summons. And that could be a fire in a sense, because usually it's a, you know, someone's going to sue somebody. So it's kind of an interesting idea that that word comes up. But I don't know how that comes to play. I never looked into it. But a notice is something that really is the beginning of a case. You have to serve notice on the parties that's part of that suit, whether it's a criminal act or whether it is a civil act. All right, next.
Okay, does the NLA website have any detailed information or resources on the Articles of Confederation? I want to gather accurate information to present in a future meeting. And one thing I'd like to say is that a lot of people come and ask questions about the website, and for that reason we have a search function at the top right corner of the web page, which you can use to find things that are on the website. And I would suggest that people, if they have questions, first go in and type your question and see what you come up with, because there's a lot of information there from people that have written little things on various sections on the website under various topics, and unless you've really, really, really gone through everything, you wouldn't be aware of it. So try the search function and see what you come up with.
Well, I'll tell you what. It's always been depressing to me. I've been on computers for a very long time, going back into, I think my first computer was 1990 or maybe it was 1989. But I've always found it a problem in these searches. They never seem to work, whether you're working inside your software, whether you're working inside of a program, whether you're on a website. It just never seems to work. So I don't know about finding it that way. But if you look at the logic of the way the site is put up, you might find it. We might have a copy of those articles. Let me see, right down here, if you come under Education Starts Here, we have articles and essays. Okay, maybe it might be on that page. I don't think it is, but we'll take a quick look. Yeah, well, Articles of Corporation is there, Articles of Freedom, Articles, a summary. Let me see what else articles are. Somewhere in the site we may have it. I never put a lot into it because really those articles of Confederation ultimately was really things put together in a way so that we could fight the war and have some kind of a government. But it failed in many, many ways. There was no serious judicial process in that whole system. And it wasn't really fully thought out, as they have worked through it with the Federalist Papers. And they had many, many years to work on this because, you know, Jefferson and Madison particularly and others, of course, were diligently digging and looking deep into a government, what kind of a government we would want to have. And they seemed to have touched the bases on everything that was available to them and came up with the Republic. But we came up with a unique republic. It's a natural law republic. Only one of its kind today. You know, there are plenty of republics. I think there's something like 250 republics in the world, okay? But the question is what kind of republic do you have? Is your constitution really focused in on the laws of nature, of nature's God? Is it a natural law republic? Or is it a republic that is a constitution created by men, not necessarily the people? And of course, we're very unique in that fashion. It's the second natural law republic in the world throughout time, as far as we can see. And the first one goes all the way back to Israel, which brings us quite a few years before Christ. I'm trying to think. I think it was like 1400 or 1600 years before Christ, if I recall. So, again, I'm not sure whether I'm answering the question. Read that question one more time so I can finalize my thoughts.
Well, it just says, does the NLA website have any detailed information or resources on the Articles of Confederation?
Yeah, it may be up here. I can't find it right now. I don't know whether I put it up here. And again, I didn't put too much merit into it because we have the Constitution, and the Constitution trumps it all. And it's a very powerful paper, and it's something, of course, we're going to be talking about tonight. So, okay, next question. Well, let me just finish one more point here. You know, again, how to get around this website? We tried to put it together as logical as possible. You know, you go under the welcoming tab and you find different information. Just go down and pretty much you can get some ideas of with some keywords here and looking on things. And we have some focuses on the sheriff. And if you're looking into educational things, you'll find it under Education Starts Here. You'll find courses and different information, articles, memorandums, all kinds of things concerning the law, particularly for the purpose of education. If you want to start a committee of safety, then everything you need is really underneath this particular tab here, Start a Committee of Safety. Today's issues, there's a lot of different issues up here and issues that have been around for a while, but they're still valid today because they either haven't been solved yet or they're injuring us, or maybe we've solved some of these problems. And, of course, we have our directory, okay, our members, and then our cases, federal court cases, and then the store. So it is kind of logically put together, but whatever you're looking for, if we have it up here, and I'm not sure that we do, you'll find it under Education Starts Here. You'll find it somewhere in here. If you go through these pages, you'll find it. You could try our search bar, but I don't put too much faith in that. Like I said, it's never worked for me, you know, never. So, okay, next question.
Yeah, there are two search bars, then there is one down below the donate now button, and it, the only reason I brought that up is somebody sent me a question, must be 3 months ago, and so just for kicks I threw it in a search bar and it came up with exactly what they wanted, and so I send them that, and they acknowledge the artwork great. So that's a consensus of one, John. sometimes you get lucky. What can I say?
Well, you might find it, but if you look at this, I just went and looked articles. Yep. Okay, different articles of Federation, Confederation. But just look here, it's 9 pages plus. Okay, let's see where the last is. Let's see what how many numbers it goes through, because it looks like it goes beyond 9 pages. Maybe I'm tripping up the site because it's waiting to go forward here. Anyway, yeah, you could get lucky with that. And again, I have always, you know, whenever I looked into software to try to get help from within the software, you know, the only way to really get through anything to understand something is actually read the entire book. You know, you got 49 pages here of information on the Word article or articles. So, anyway, if they dabble in that area, if we have it, they'll find it. Next question.
Okay, we were talking maybe 3 weeks, a month, 5 weeks ago about Chris Britton and the organization called Republic Regulators. And they were talking about October 6th was their date, but they didn't really say why, what, where, when, how. And apparently they are scheduling a stay-at-home and don't spend any money for 30 days. And they're trying to get people to go along with that just to make an impact and make people pay attention. And as I recall, the date to start that was the October 16th date. And that's the last of the questions, John.
Of last year or this year? October 16th.
Coming up, the 16th.
Yeah, I don't know that that's going to be... if that's really going to work or happen. I mean, look at someone who really knows how to get the word out. That's one of the things we fail at here at National Liberty Alliance, really trying to get the word out. if anybody that knows how to get the word out, how to get, you know, get information out to people, get it to the right people and get them, you know, to the people that would respond, and maybe how to make money to support what we're doing, you know, looking for people who might, anybody has that background, you know, we definitely desperately need somebody, because we really need to go professional to really have anything, you know, to really finally complete what we really want to do. But there is one thing we can complete, whether we have money or not, which I'm going to talk about shortly. First, we're going to finish off the questions.
No, that was the last question, John.
There's no announcements, right?
No.
Okay. Let me just go back, just to put it on the front page here. Send things back here. All right. I am absolutely convinced. I've been looking at this for a very long time. I've been studying, researching, writing, and building this website. And I mean, for many years here, putting in full time, trying to work through the things that need to be worked through. And the key things that need to be worked through, really, is to have government by consent and to have courts of justice. And if we don't have courts of justice, we have nothing. I don't care what Trump does. I don't care how great the administration is, and it is a great administration, and he is doing great work, and he is going to bring us to a certain place. But it's all going to fall apart. It's not going to go anywhere. It's not going to last very long as the people don't step up. You know, a couple of things, take Thomas Jefferson said, and I say this often, if people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. So, you know, if you don't have a proper education, you can't do whatever it is you're trying to do if you're not educated in that area. And it is the duty of every one of us to be educated in that area, and that's the purpose of National Liberty Alliance. People need to be educated. You can't have government by consent if you don't know how to have government by consent. You can't have a government that's obedient to the people if you don't know when they are being obedient to the people or when they're going astray and take us down a path of destruction. You can't know those things. It's an impossibility. You can't do these things without knowledge. Knowledge is important. But what we're working on right now, and again, that works with the committees of safety. You know, I don't know whether we're ever going to be successful with that. We'll continue to push forward on that. But until the people discover that that's what they have to do, and we're not going to go nowhere. And if they don't join forces together, united we stand, divided we shall fall. You know, you can't build one committee of safety and think you're going to save the world. Ain't going to happen. You're not even going to save your own area. You will to a degree, of course. But remember, there's a higher power. That higher power is found on the federal level. And when that federal level is totally lost, everything below it is lost. No matter what work you've done, no matter what accomplishments you've done, no matter what control you have over your little corner of the world, whether it's and we look, being ultimately at a county focus, you know. You want to take control of your county government. You want to take control of your towns and your city governments. You want to take control of the schools, the school boards. You want to make sure the proper education is being put through it. You want to take control of the people that represent you in Washington and people that represent you in your state. That's the maximum control you can get. You can't get any further than that. And remember, you're only getting, you know, one person. Okay, that you haven't control over from within your county that goes to Washington or goes up to your state. You know, united we stand. We have to do all counties. We have 62 counties in New York. We have to do all 62 counties or at least two-thirds of them to have control, entire control of the state. And we need to have every state in the union or at least two-thirds of them, and that's a guess, just roughly speaking. Okay, maybe we don't need two-thirds to be accomplished the way I'm thinking we need to be accomplished. But, you know, if you get two-thirds of the states working together, working their business, doing what they have to do in the county level, all up, and working together within their state, now you're in safe hands. But there is a biggest danger. Jefferson spoke about the largest danger. You could do all that you want. You can know how to have government by consent. You could start to take control of your school boards. You could start to take control of government on the grassroots level, everything that affects you. And you can have 100% control of all of that. But if you don't have a just court, you have nothing. Look what they've done to Trump. He's just an example. That was no surprise to me. It's already happened to me, and it's a lot of people this happened to. They just come out and get you. And they bring Trump charges up against you, and they do what they please. And they don't care who's looking, because it's only a few people. They really don't care. It never gets out to the whole, so you don't know. So if people want to live in that kind of darkness, and they want to continue in that kind of an end situation at the end of the day for either yourself or your children or your children's children, which I don't think it'd go that long. And AI is a major problem, which I don't think is solvable, but I don't know. I don't look enough into, well, I've looked enough into it that makes me frightened to death. Maybe that's the end of mankind. Maybe that's going to be hell. We're going to build our own hell. Who knows? You know, you go watch that movie. What was it, 1984, I think, was that movie that was put out, you know, controlled by Big Brother? Well, imagine if AI is your Big Brother. You got a problem. So, but in any event, laying that aside, we can do what we can do, okay? And the question is we doing it? I get very depressed often enough, talk to people, maybe go to a place, meet where people are talking, discussing things, and you bring the solution, but nobody does anything. They complain, they get angry, they bang their fist on the desk or whatever, you know, into the air, and you give them the solution, and they don't do it. Solution takes money and time. If you're not going to give money and time, there is no solution. There's no solution out there that doesn't require money and time. And we're not talking about one person, although we can if you get a multimillionaire wants to support us, throw us a couple of $1 million, you know, we will become very self-sufficient, very sufficient very quickly over time, because with that kind of money, we could be able to hire the right kind of persons, get the word out, and really work things out to really have an income coming in to continue to feed an organization that's professional, that's being paid. You know, we're all volunteers here, okay? And there are very few of us that are putting full-time effort into this thing, very few of us. Count them on your hand. Count them on half of your hand. And we need everybody putting full-time effort into this. But you can't have that if you don't pay people. You can't require certain things if you're not paying. You got to have a paycheck to hang over someone's head. Get the job done or find someone else to do it. Okay? And that's how business works, and that's how this needs to work too. But we're not at that level where we have money. We don't have the money. It's up to you to support. The most important thing above all these things to support is to get our courts of record back, to get justice courts back. If we don't have justice courts, we have nothing, nothing at all, zero. It doesn't matter if you have 100% control of your legislator and the administration. It doesn't matter if they're all doing the right thing. It doesn't matter. Because if you don't have courts of justice, it's going to get lost because you will lose from evil every single time. And so the most important thing right now National Liberty Alliance is doing is trying to get our courts of justice back. We've gone up to the courts on four different occasions. On four different occasions, that doorkeeper has thrown us out. We've scratched our head, banged our heads on tables to some degree, trying to figure out how to get past these people, to get the word in front of the Supreme Court, all nine justices, to put them on notice. Once they know and it's there on paper, they're liable and they can hang. And that's the and they will know that, okay? But how do we get our papers there? How do we get these people to look to see and realize? They already know the problem, but it's not. It doesn't play a big role in their consciousness. They don't think about it. They continue to go on to the status quo, onto the BS that they learned in law school. You know, those who have woken up and realized that the common law has been lost, that the law of the land is gone, they can't do anything. They're not doing anything because they're not paying attention to it. And money is the name of the game, ultimately. Look at the minions of the New World Order. You can't have a New World Order without minions. You have to have hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of minions in order to create, maintain, and control a New World Order. And that's called the ABA, the American Bar Association, and a whole bunch of organizations that spring out from there. They're the ones that teach everything. They train everyone in the court system how it works, what to do, and what they have to do and what they can't do. And I truly believe they put moron clerks, the lowest level clerks, at the process of the doorkeepers, because they tell them to do things that's unlawful, and they don't know it's unlawful, because they are true believers in what they've been taught in law school. You know, the thinkers, they want to be behind those people. Because you get the word to the thinkers and put it right in front of their face, the ones who is responsible and liable, they're going to know the day is going to come that they may hang if they don't do something because you put them onto notice. So that's what we're trying to do, is put them onto notice. Now, we did find a new way to get into the court. A very interesting way. It just came about. The potential of this only came about recently, this month, in August of 2026. I forget what date, that's irrelevant, but August of 2026, something happened in the courts. And we're going to discuss a little bit of that, of what happened in the court. And we're going to look at the paper that I had written here. The paper originally was, I think it was 18 major pages, the first 18 pages, and then a series of memorandums. But we're limited to 40 pages, so I rewrote the whole thing. I mean, it's got the basic, the basis of what we've already written, but a lot more, and we've taken from the memorandums and the important things that needed to be said and put in, and I think it works out better because it's much clearer and focused. I think really we had too much information. So, but we're down to, we have to be under 40 pages. I think we're down to 32 or 33 pages, something like that, plus some attachments, which is another 6 pages. We're under the 40-page limit. Okay, maybe we're at 38 with the attachments. But what I'm going to do, and I'm not sure which way I want to go with this first, maybe I might have covered a little bit of this in the paper that I read. I put this on video. I put it up on YouTube. I think it was yesterday or the day before. I put it up on YouTube. I put it up on Rumble. And I uploaded the paper here on our front page. the new paper going in. You can read the presentment to SCOTUS by clicking on this here at on our front page, and you can read the paper on your own. Okay, it's 32 pages plus attachments. Okay, also read the cover letter to the clerk. Okay, this is where the power is in the cover letter to the clerk. We're going to discuss this a little bit. Hopefully we'll have some time for discussion, but this is going to take a little time to read, maybe 45 minutes or so, to go through the whole paper. I think it's extremely important. It's a powerful paper, and it has to be laid at their feet. It has to put them on notice, and they better have the fear of the people. You know, when the people fear the government, you have tyranny, you have problems, you know. When the government fears you, you then have, I forget what it is that they said, how that quote goes. When the government fears the people, you have liberty, okay. I'm just going to read this first part, then we're going to read the paper, and then we'll open up for discussions. But this is to take notice of a judicial point. Please take judicial notice. This is going to the clerk. I don't think I'm going to read this to clerk's paper, at least not tonight. Maybe we'll read it next week. It's 4 pages. But I'm going to read this one part. Please take notice that on August 5th, 2026, Chief Justice Roberts restored the Supreme Court's independence from Congress by giving its clerks notice that the First Amendment includes the right to petition. That is the key. When I heard about this recently, I just learned about this recently in a video that some people have been passing around, and I went through this video and listened very carefully, and it all focuses in on a right to petition. It's the First Amendment right to petition the government, okay? And, of course, the Supreme Court is the third branch of government. So, let me read this. Please take judicial notice that on August 5th, 2026, Chief Judge Roberts restored the Supreme Court's independence from Congress by giving its clerk notice that the First Amendment includes the right to petition. We the people are grateful for this good faith obedience by returning to original law. We the people now send this remonstrance to this court so that it continues its good faith restoration of the Republic by guaranteeing the right of petition as command instead of a request. We're not requesting anyone. We're demanding them. We are commanding them by our First Amendment right, an unalienable right to petition the government. They must hear, and they must listen, and they must respond. That's our First Amendment. Roberts put that back to play and sent it out to the clerks. The clerks must, if it comes from the perspective of a petition, they must accept it. And they can't throw it out. Okay? So let me just read a little more, and then we'll get to the paper. Let's see. We'll pick up, we the people created government to serve us and reserved our constitutional rights as inherent and individual powers that by that their nature are outside of the greater than government powers. People may freely command, that's petition, government, legislative, executive, or judicial, for a redress of grievances. No government has authority to oppose, directly or indirectly, the exercise of right, as it is clearly stated in Miranda versus Arizona, where rights secured by the Constitution are involved, there can be no rulemaking or legislation that would abrogate them. All right. And it goes on additionally concerning Joseph's stories, commentaries, and so on. And again, I'm not going to read all that. But again, maybe we'll look at this paper at another time. Maybe we'll look at it next week. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to play this video that I put together. It's reading the paper, and we'll talk about it. But it's not going to go anywhere if people doesn't support it. I've been begging for money for over a month, and we're still down to like a little over $500. We need $1,000 to $1,200 to go through this process. That's all we need. Let's say $1,200. That's all we need. We don't need millions, okay? We don't need hundreds of thousands. You get a lawyer that wants to take this to the Supreme Court, this paper, you're gonna have to put $30,000 or $40,000 down just to start. Just to start. There's no one here making money on this. We have to buy toner, we have to buy paper, and we have to serve papers, and all that costs money. It comes to about $1,200. We need to serve all 9 justices with three of these papers. We need to serve everybody in Trump's administration, plus at least the most important ones, with a few congressmen and a few senators. That's about 30 people. Okay. We're waiting. Papers are ready. They're done. Matter of fact, Jan just went through a lot of corrections, so there's been a lot of corrections made on the paper that I'm going to read tonight. Those corrections were mostly, punctuation. But there were some, sometimes I say things in an odd way, and Jan brought it into a better way, so I moved that way. By the way, Jan, you corrected, who was it, Marbury versus Madison, who was a quote. He said things odd, too, and so I didn't change that one, because that's what he's...
They didn't need it then, huh?
Huh? What was that?
They didn't need to be corrected, you're saying?
Well, it was... it's a quote, and I didn't want to correct that. I mean, maybe it does need to be corrected.
Right.
But sometimes they talk oddly, and I guess I picked up on that stuff, too, and I talk oddly. And if my punctuation isn't well done, then it really gets odd, All right, anyway. Let's get back to this. We're going to now look at this, this paper. I will say, if we don't succeed here, we will succeed nowhere. If we don't get our courts of justice back, you can't have liberty. You can't. The government will be lost again. It's only a matter of time. The only thing to keep it in its place is to be able to take people into the courts and make sure we go through due process to hold their feet to the Constitution. As Jefferson put it, bind them down with the chains of the Constitution. And if we can't bind them down with the chains of Constitution, and that requires going into the courts to do that, then we have no control over our government, no matter what. We just don't have control over them. So I'm going to ask again, if people will send some money so we can get this out, papers are sitting ready to go. I could start printing them tomorrow and get them out the next day. Okay, but I don't have the money. People need to send me some money. I can't afford to do it. It's tough enough to just barely making things through with the support we get to maintain the National Liberty Alliance as a whole, as in general. When we have a project, we need extra money. We don't have that kind of money. And so either people are going to give us money to do this job and get it done, or they're not, and then we'll just sit here and wait until it happens, and if it never happens, then it's the people's fault. It's always the people's fault. That's what you got to remember. It's the people's fault that we are where we're at, because the people are too lazy. I speak to myself first, okay? We're too lazy. We don't want to put the time in. We want to go play and do other things. We want to put our money someplace else, Look at, this is an important thing. People need to dig into their pockets and give what they can. And if we get more than what we need, well, that's okay. It goes into National Liberty Alliance anyway, and it'll continue to support and give us a little buffer and maybe another project. I mean, we do have other projects we'd like to work on, but all the rest of the projects are kind of worthless unless we work on this one first, because without courts of justice, we have nothing. Our rights are unalienable. And the Constitution and the Bill of Rights being part of that Constitution cannot defend itself, cannot protect itself, cannot uphold it. There is movements throughout the nation right now on a national level to get rid of the Constitution. If you're not listening and what's going on, well, you better open your ears, because people are talking about getting rid of the Constitution. I think Trump's going to snuff that out, but it'll never be snuffed out forever if we don't get our courts back. That evil will raise its head again eventually anyway. So if you want liberty and you want to do something, send us some money to get this paper out. And get educated and get involved in committees of safety and organize together, working county to county, state to state. And I'll repeat this again. I think there's an attitude out there that people are afraid to connect to a national group, National Liberty Alliance, for instance, okay? But I've been from day one, and recently I've said this, and I'll say it again and always say it. The day that National Liberty Alliance gives marching orders to the committees of safety is the day you need to leave National Liberty Alliance, because we have no intentions of controlling people on the grassroots level. We believe that people will figure things out on their own, but they have to learn. You have to communicate. You have to get connected with the county next door. They may have the same problem, and you're struggling to get through that problem. And they say, why are you struggling? We figured it out. This is what we did. Hey, that's a good idea. We should do that too. We help each other. We grow each other. We teach each other. But again, you know, if people don't get involved in this, then you know what? We don't deserve liberty. If we don't get this paper into the court, and there is nobody out there doing this, nobody is focusing in on what we are focusing in. Ultimately, to get to the bottom line, it's the Rules Enabling Act. That's one focus. That's it. That's what has to be dealt with. That is the vomit. That is the problem. That is the poison. The Rules Enabling Act. Nobody is even talking about it. Maybe there are. I haven't heard about it. But maybe someone else has heard about it. Well, let me know, because I'd like to hear about it too. But to my knowledge, nobody is working on this. And if we don't solve this problem, no problem will be solved. You will not have liberty. Your children will be slaves. And that's the end of that day. That's it. Done. So I think we can get this paper through. And I think this hopefully will be the last time. And again, we'll be writing a letter to Trump and his administration and filing these papers with him again. And we're going to put them on notice. Okay? And I think you'll see how we do that when we get to those two letters, the letters going to the clerk and a letter going to Trump and his administration with a copy of these papers. I think you're going to see you know, how it is that they don't have a choice because they, too, have been put on notice. Okay? So, if people don't support this, it's not going to go through. Don't have the money? Can't do it. Okay? But even getting it out, people need to get this out into the public. You know, everybody out there seems to go out and they get involved in these conversations and all these different social medias, texting this and that. Put out the information we got here. Tell the people the solution. We have it. Support what we're doing. Take back our courts. All right, I'm going to play this video now. Hang on a minute. Let me see if I can find it quickly. Yep, I think I got it. Okay, and after this, we'll have an open forum, and even if we have to go a little late tonight, we'll go a little late. But by the way, the queue is open for anybody who wants to get into the queue, *6 and 1. If you're on a phone, it should be a button if you're on an app or a browser. Okay, here is the presentment to SCOTUS. All right, this is an extraordinary presentment against the federal judiciary and the American Bar Association, being filed by the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, the Sureties of Peace, in the Supreme Court of the United States. This is an application for a First Amendment right of redress of grievances to the Honorable Chief Justice John G. Roberts, Jr. of the Supreme Court of the United States. We're going to be filing this independently under a particular rule which requires them to immediately, the clerk that is, to immediately pass on to a judge. And so we'll be filing individually against all nine. We'll be sending 3 copies to each one of these justices through this particular process by their rule. By common law, they should just take it, period. But they do have a rule, so we'll execute that rule. So we'll be, filing 3 for each of the justices. This one is to Judge Roberts, John G. Roberts, and we'll be filing papers also on the other 8 court justices. Okay, so it's prepared in compliance with Rule 22 from the grand jury concerning insurrection in violation of 18 U.S.C. subsection 2383, sedition, conspiracy in violation of 18 U.S.C. 2384, and advocating the overthrow of government in violation of subsection 2385. Whereas we, the people, being bound in obedience, natural law and USC subsection 2382 concerning misprison of treason, we owing allegiance to the United States and having knowledge of the commission of treason against them, as soon as may be, disclose and make known the same to the President or some judge of the United States. And then, of course, we give the address, the contact information for Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. Now, before we proceed, I want to read a couple of paragraphs on a cover letter. We're not going to read the whole letter. It's a 4-page letter, but we're only going to read a couple of paragraphs. I think it's important for people to realize the power and the authority that we, the people, have. So this is a notice put into the letter. Please take notice that on August 5th, 2026, Chief Justice Roberts restored the Supreme Court's independence from Congress by giving its clerks notice that the First Amendment includes the right to petition. We the people are grateful for this good faith obedience by returning to original law. We the people now send this remonstrance to this court so that it continues its good faith restoration of the Republic by guaranteeing the right to petition as a command instead of a request. We the people created government to serve us and reserved our constitutional rights as inherent and individual powers that, by their nature, are outside of the greater than government power and are greater than the government powers. People may freely command, petition that is, government, legislators, executive, or judicial, for a redress of grievances. No government has the authority to oppose, directly or indirectly, the exercise of right. As it clearly states in Miranda versus Arizona, where rights secured by the Constitution are involved, there can be no rulemaking or legislation which would abrogate them. Additionally, Joseph Story's commentary states, the First Amendment secures the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. This would seem unnecessary to be expressly provided for in a republican government, since it results from the very nature of its structure and institutions. It is impossible that it could be practically denied. Furthermore, our filings concern a national emergency as per 18 U.S.C. subsection 2076, whereas the clerk is required by law to file under penalty of law, a law which you have thrice broken. The law is clear in that you possess no constitutional authority to judge its merits. So lots of people are having papers rejected from the Supreme Court by rule. And when you're coming in as a petition, which an extraordinary presentment is a petition by the from the people themselves, being the grand jury, they have no choice but to accept it. And if they deny it, they're denying your First Amendment right. And then that opens them up for a lawsuit. And we will proceed with a lawsuit against the clerk should they refuse to go forward with this. We'll also propose an indictment against that particular clerk and file it with the Attorney General. Okay, this paper is going to be copied to President Donald J. Trump and his administration, and a few congressmen and a few senators. We do have a cover letter, which we're not going to read on this paper here, but we do have a cover letter, and basically the cover letter does put them in subjection to a response to this also from the standpoint, let this serve notice that we are notifying the Trump administration of subversion against the United States of America. A table of contents and a couple of exhibits. We'll be looking at least on one of those exhibits in this paper. Table of authorities. We've listed out all the authorities that we've brought forward in this particular paper. An extraordinary presentment. Comes now the constituted, unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, here and after we the people, for an unprecedented presentment to the United States Supreme Court, being the overseers of the federal judiciary, Article 3, Section 1, and guarantor of a republican form of government, Article 4, Section 4. Original jurisdiction, law of the land, Article 3, Subsection 2, also known as natural law and equity, both under the rules of natural law, as we the people ordained, also known as the laws of nature and of nature's God, declared in the Declaration of Independence. Nothing in this presentment is to be interpreted as being under civil law, which is repugnant to the common law of the land. This is a bill of particulars concerning treason at the highest level. Author and source of law. We the people ordained and established the Constitution for the United States of America. We the people vested Congress with statute-making powers. We the people defined and limited that power of statute-making. We the people limited lawmaking powers to ourselves alone. We the people did not vest the judiciary with civil law-making powers. We the people are the judicial tribunal, having attributes and exercising functions independently of the person of the magistrate designed generally to hold it, and proceeding according to the course of common law. The constitutions of most of our states assert all power is inherent in the people, that they may exercise it by themselves in all cases to which they think themselves competent, as in electing their functionaries, executive and legislative, and deciding by a jury of themselves both fact and law in all judiciary cases in which any fact is involved. Sovereignty itself is, of course, not subject to law, for it is the author and source of law. But in our system, while sovereign powers are delegated to the agencies of government via Article 1, subsection 8 and 9, and Article 3, sovereignty itself remains with the people, by whom and for whom all government exists and acts. The law of the land, Article 4, Clause 2, is the Article 6, Clause 2, is the definition and limitation of power. Sovereignty means that the decree of the sovereign makes the law, and foreign courts cannot condemn influences persuading a sovereign to make the decree. The people of this state, as the successors of the former sovereign, are entitled to all the rights which formerly belonged to the king by his prerogative, and the state cannot diminish the rights of the people. Supreme sovereignty is in the people, and no authority can, on any pretense whatsoever, be exercised over the citizens of this state, but such as is or shall be derived from and granted by the people of this state. The jury is an unalienable right bestowed upon us from God via natural law and codified in the Bill of Rights by we the people. We need not the bar or the court's approval to form. To require such an approval is an affront on our sovereignty. We the people have been providentially provided legal recourse to address the criminal conduct of persons themselves entrusted to dispense justice. In the Supreme Court of the case of the United States versus Williams, Justice Anton Scalia, writing for the majority, confirmed that the American grand jury is neither part of the judicial, executive, nor legislative branches of government, but instead belongs to the people. It is in effect a fourth branch of government, governed and administered too directly by and on behalf of the American people, and its authority emanates from the Bill of Rights. Thus, citizens have the unbridled right to impanel their own grand juries and present true bills of indictment to a court, which is then required to commence a criminal proceeding. Our founding fathers persistently thereby created a buffer the people may rely upon for justice when public officers, including judges, criminally violate the law. Because the grand jury is an institution separate from the courts, over whose functioning the courts do not preside, we think it clear that as a general matter, at least, no such supervisory judicial authority exists, rooted in long centuries of Anglo-American history. The grand jury is mentioned in the Bill of Rights, but not in the body of the Constitution. It has not been textually assigned, therefore, to any of the branches described in the first three articles. It is a constitutional fixture in its own right. In fact, the whole theory of its function is that it belongs to no branch of the institutional government, serving as a kind of a buffer or referee between the government and the people. Although the grand jury normally operates, of course, in the courthouse and under judicial auspices, its institutional relationship with its judicial branch has traditionally been, so to speak, at arm's length. Take note that via subversion by the 1938 SCOTUS and the 1934 Congress, we the sovereign people have been barred from our own courts by rules. Judges' direct involvement in the functioning of the grand jury has generally been confined to the constitutive one of calling the grand jurors together and administering their oath of office. The grand jury's functional independence from the judicial branch is evident both in its scope and its power to investigate criminal wrongdoing and in the manner in which that power is exercised. Unlike a court, whose jurisdiction is predicated upon a specific case or controversy, the grand jury can investigate merely on suspicion that the law is being violated, or even because it wants assurance that it is not. It need not identify the offenders it suspects or even the precise nature of the offense it is investigating. The grand jury requires no authorization from its constituting courts to initiate an investigation, nor does the prosecutor require leave of court to seek a grand jury indictment. And in its day-to-day functioning, the grand jury generally operates without the interference of a presiding judge. It swears in its own witnesses and deliberates in total secrecy. Given the grand jury's operational separateness from its constituting court, it should come to act as to no surprise that we have been reluctant to invoke the judicial supervisory power as basis for prescribing modes of grand jury procedure. Over the years, we have received many requests to exercise supervision over the grand jury's evidence-taking procedure, but we have refused them all. In Calandra versus the United States, Supra, a grand jury witness faced questions that were allegedly based upon physical evidence the government had obtained through a violation of the Fourth Amendment. We rejected the proposal that the exclusionary rule be extended to grand jury proceedings. Because of the potential injury to the historic role and functions of the grand jury, with Costello versus the United States, we declined to enforce the hearsay rule in grand jury proceedings, since that would run counter to the whole history of the grand jury's institutions, in which laymen conduct their inquiries unfettered by technical rules. We accepted Justice Nelson's description, Costello versus the United States, where we held that it would run counter to the whole history of the grand jury institution to permit an indictment to be challenged on the grounds that there was incompetent or inadequate evidence before the grand jury. And we reaffirmed the principle recently in Bank of Nova Scotia, where we held that the mere fact that evidence itself is unreliable is not sufficient to require a dismissal of an indictment, and that a challenge to the reliability of competence of the evidence presented to the grand jury will not be heard. It would make little sense, we think, to abstain from reviewing the evidentiary support for the grand jury's judgment while scrutinizing the sufficiency of the prosecutor's presentation. A complaint about the quality or adequacy of the evidence can always be recast as a complaint that the prosecutor's presentation was incomplete or misleading. Our words, Costello, being repeating, review of page 55, facially valid indictments on such grounds would run counter to the whole history of the grand jury institution, and neither justice nor the concept of a fair trial requires it. The grand jury is an investigative body acting independently of either prosecutor or judge, whose missions is to bring to trial those who may be guilty and clear the innocent. We the people have the unalienable right to consent or not to consent as to government's accusations against the people. All officers of the court, judge, prosecutor, appointed counsels, attorneys, sheriffs, marshals, and clerks are government employees, instructed and taught by the bar that we are under civil law and not natural law, also known as the law of the land, and thereby uphold law above justice. Therefore, to allow our servants to control the jury would breed absolute government corruption and control. It is the unalienable right of we the people to provide for the administration of the grand and petit juries. The first recorded grand jury was established by the people through the Magna Carta, whereas the grand jury assembled itself and brought into subjection the tyrant king back under the will of the people, and today now so do we the people. There can be no legal right to resist the oppressions of the government unless there be some legal tribunal other than the government and wholly independent of and above the government to judge between the government and those that who resist its oppressions. The authority to judge that are the powers of the government and what are the liberties of the people must necessarily be vested in one or the other of the parties themselves, the government or the people, because there is no third party to whom it can be entrusted. If the authority be vested to the government is absolute and the people have no liberties except such as the government sees fit to indulge them with. Affirmation of acts of treason under seal. Bouvier's law. A presentment, properly speaking, is the notice taken by the grand jury of any offense from their own knowledge, as of a nuisance, a libel, or the like. In these cases, the author of the offense should be named so that they may be indicted. The author of the offense, the federal judiciary and the American Bar Association. The federal judiciary, the American Bar Association, the 73rd Congress, and the 1938 United States Supreme Court, acting outside of their authority in violation of 18 U.S.C. subsection 2384, seditious conspiracy, thereby did conspire to overthrow the government of the United States via the 1934 Rules Enabling Act. On November 10, 2014, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury filed a writ quo warranto on all federal and state courts and all elected officials concerning said seditious conspiracy, and refiled on May 13, 2015. All respondents failed to plea and defend. The record shows that no returns, objections, nor more time was requested to answer, whereas silence can only be equated with fraud where there is a legal or moral duty to speak, or where an inquiry left unanswered would be intentionally misleading. We the people are demanding declaratory judgments that will restore our courts of justice and obedience to the law of the land. We the people codified our unalienable rights in the Declaration of Independence when we said we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce us under absolute despotism, it is our right, it is our duty to throw off such government and to provide new gods for our future security. This presentment is the beginning of that process. In 1934, the 73rd Congress, acting outside of their authority as we the people ordained in Article 1, Section 8, in an act of sedition, passed the Rules Enabling Act. Perpetrated by the American Bar Association, the 73rd Congress, and the 1938 United States Supreme Court, which have poisoned every attorney and every court in America by replacing law and equity with civil law in 1938. See Exhibit A, one page attached. Subsequently, together, said perpetrators did conspire and did overthrow the government of the United States of America by abrogating the people's courts of justice, turning them into dens of thieves in violation of 18 U.S.C. subsection 2383 and 18 U.S.C. subsection 2384. Whereas the American Bar Association, being the chief orchestrator, advocates, abets, advises, and teaches the duty, necessity, and desirability of abrogating the law of the land to their minions of the New World Order, also known as the bar attorneys, in violation of 18 U.S.C. subsection 2385. This single treasonous act abrogated our courts of law, courts of equity, Declaration of Independence, United States Constitution, and its capstone Bill of Rights. Esquires are unwittingly taught and convinced that we are under Roman law and a democracy fashioned under Rome through outcome-based education. And having no prior proper K-12 education, they also, through an outcome-based education, were primed to receive the lie and thereby are transformed into the minions of the New World Order. And with the assistance of the Democratic Party, thus covertly changed our republic in the minds of the people to a democracy, and our courts from common law to chancery courts. Their belief in what they have been taught is so strongly embedded into their minds that they are blinded to the truth being we are a natural law constitutional republic fashioned under Israel and the Bible, and that we the people, being the sovereign, ordain the law. These esquires enslave we the people via statutory prisons constructed under Roman law, which was fashioned under Babylonian law. The destruction of our republic required an army of well-trained minions, true believers, unbeknownst to them, working diligently for the New World Order. They accomplished this by opening bar schools and over time convinced the people, little by little, that we are under civil law and not common law. This was initiated when the King of England sent swarms of esquires in 1750, when we were the 13 colonies, to change our courts of justice under God's law into chancery courts under man's law. This was solidified in 1938. When the American Bar Association steered United States Supreme Court under the supposed authority of the Rules Enabling Act, established the ABA's written federal rules of civil and criminal procedure, that and the states steered by the ABA followed suit, thus replacing common law with civil law throughout America. Said conspirators have levied war against the Constitution and thereby we the people. They have given aid and comfort to the enemy within the United States and elsewhere. They have concealed a conspiracy to destroy our republic. They have engaged in actions to subvert the government of the United States. They have conspired to conceal natural law, also known as the law of the land. They have, in conjunction with the teachings of the American Bar Association, the National Lawyers Guild, the American Civil Liberties Union, the National Lawyers Association, the Southern Poverty Law Center, and many other anti-constitutional associations, knowingly and willfully advocated, abet, advised, and teach that natural law, and thereby the law of the land, has been abrogated, and thus have conspired to overthrow our republic. Under the ABA's Rules Enabling Act of 1934, the 73rd Congress allegedly enabled the 1938 United States Supreme Court the authority to prescribe rules under 28 U.S.C. subsection 2072A. The United States Supreme Court and the federal judiciary then covertly abused that authority to conceal and abridge the supreme law of the land under Federal Rule 2. According to the Federal Judicial Center, a government agency, on September 16, 1938, pursuant to its de facto authority under the repugnant Rules Enabling Act of 1934, via Rule 2, stated that the Supreme Court enacted uniformed rules of procedure for the federal courts. Under the new rules, suits in equity and suits at common law were grouped together under the term civil action, claiming that rigid application of common law rules brought about injustice. See Exhibit A, attached. And this is a copy of Exhibit A, which is attached to our presentment. This was an act of treason, whereas any judge who does not comply with his oath to the Constitution of the United States wars against the Constitution and engages in acts in violation of the supreme law of the land. The judge is engaged in acts of treason. The ABA judiciary's dark reasoning for abolishing common law is because they claim that a rigid application of common law rules, also known as God's self-evident truths, maxims, brought about injustice. This is absurd, considering that God is good, just, and merciful, and that they are not. And therefore it follows that his laws is just and merciful, while the hearts of men are desperately wicked. Who can know it? The truth of the matter is that common law sheds light on the ABA judiciary's dark deeds, thereby revealing their true intentions. Their claim that common law rules brought about injustice was an act of deflection, whereas their civil law rules brought about injustice. This seditious act, under the teachings and guidings of the Subversives of American Bar Association and the aforesaid anti-constitutional associations, executed a silent coup by claiming the abrogation of the common law with its unalienable rights that were endowed by our Creator, and covertly substituted them with civil rights legislated by lawless men, and teach judicial comity as common law. The American Bar Association Federal Judicial Center, proceeding under the de facto authority of 28 U.S.C. subsection 620A, claim their purpose is to further the development and adoption of improved judicial administration in the courts of the United States. One of the center's main functions is to educate and train personnel of the judicial branch of the government, including but not limited to judges, magistrates, clerks of the court, probation officers, lawyers, and persons serving as mediators and arbitrators. Presently, the center's governing board is chaired by Chief Justice of the United States, John G. Roberts, Jr. As per Black's Law, law derives from precedents, legislation, or custom under three categories. Number one, common law, is subject to natural law written by nature's God in his word and the hearts of men. It is simply common sense with an eye for justice. Number two, equity, under our Constitution, is subject to the rules of common law and the Constitution written by the people, by the authority vested in them by nature's God via the Declaration of Independence, which was a covenant with God and therefore cannot be broken but by his wrath. Three, civil law is subject to the state. Any law subject to a constitution written by the state is civil law and not equity, written by men whose conscience is seared. The Constitution defines the law of the land as natural law and equity, as the supreme law of the land. Whereas the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the constitutional laws of any states, which includes rules, to the contrary, notwithstanding. It appears that the judges who are expected to know the law need to be instructed in the law, or are guilty of high treason under 18 U.S.C. subsection 2381. Whereas Congress alone was empowered under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18, to write laws in equity compatible with the rules of common law, Congress does not possess the power to abrogate natural law. That jurisdiction belongs to God alone, whereas the American Bar Association indoctrinated judges think they can change God's law. They think that they are above God, that they can just change our natural law to civil law, which places the people under their merciless, destructive jurisdictions of Leviathan. This action is the very definition of a coup, and the said defenders are thereby guilty of treason. In Marbury v. Madison, it was properly decided that it is a proposition too plain to be contested that the Constitution controls any legislative act or rule repugnant to it, or that the legislature or Supreme Court may alter the Constitution by an ordinary act. Certainly all those who have framed written constitutions contemplate them as forming the fundamental and paramount law of the nation, and consequently the theory of every such government must be that an act of the legislature or rule repugnant to the Constitution is void. This theory is essentially attached to a written Constitution and is consequently to be considered by this court as one of the fundamental principles of our society. It is not, therefore, to be lost sight of in the further consideration of this subject. If an act of the legislature or the Supreme Court repugnant to the Constitution is void, does it, notwithstanding its invalidity, bind the courts and oblige them to give it effect? Or, in other words, though it be not law, does it constitute a rule as operative as if it was law? This would be to overthrow, in fact, what was established in theory, and would seem, at first view, an absurdity too gross to be insisted on. It shall, however, receive more attentive consideration. It is indefatigably the providence and the duty of the judicial department to say what the law is. Those who apply the rule to a particular cases must of necessity expound and interpret that rule. If two laws conflict with each other, the courts must decide on the operation of each. So if law be in opposition to the Constitution, if both the law and the Constitution apply to a particular case, so that the court must either decide that case conformably to the law, disregarding the Constitution, or conformably to the Constitution, disregarding the law. The court must determine which of these conflicting rules govern the case. This is of the very essence of judicial duty. If then the courts are to regard the Constitution, and the Constitution is superior to any ordinary act of the legislature, the Constitution and not such ordinary act must govern the case to which they both apply. Those then who controvert the principle that the Constitution is to be considered in court as a paramount law are reduced to the necessity of maintaining that courts must close their eyes on the Constitution and see only the law. This doctrine would subvert the very foundation of all written constitution. It would declare that an act which, according to the principles and theory of our government, is entirely void, is yet in practice completely obligatory. It would declare that if the legislature shall do what is expressly forbidden, such act, notwithstanding the express prohibition, is in reality effectual. It would be given to the legislature a practical and real omnipotence with the same breath which professes to restrict their powers with narrow limits. It is prescribing limits and declaring that those limits may be passed at pleasure. It thus reduces to nothing what we have deemed the greatest improvement on a political institution, a written constitution, would of itself be sufficient in America, where written constitutions have been viewed with so much reverence, for rejecting the construction. But the particular expressions of the Constitution of the United States furnish additional arguments in favor of its rejection. Thus, the particular phraseology of the Constitution of the United States confirms and strengthens the principles supposed to be essential to all written constitutions, that a law repugnant to the Constitution is void, and that courts as well as other departments are bound by that instrument. The government of the United States has been emphatically termed a government of laws and not of men. It will certainly cease to deserve this high appellation if the laws furnish no remedy for the violation of a vested legal right. It is in these words, I do solemnly swear that I will administer justice without respect to persons, and do equal right to the poor and to the rich, and that I will faithfully and impartially discharge all the duties incumbent on me as according to the best of my abilities and understanding agreeably to the Constitution and the laws of the United States. Why does a judge swear to discharge his duties agreeably to the Constitution of the United States if that Constitution forms no rule for his government, if it closes its closed upon him and cannot be inspected by him? If such be the real state of things, this is worse than solemn mockery. To prescribe or to take this oath becomes equally a crime. Our founding fathers believed it to be necessary that all power that is on earth be limited, and never intended for judges to decide issues such as Bible or prayer in school, or to overrule God's commandments, thou shalt not kill, by legislating abortion, or rule on the same-sex marriage. The Creator's law book already settled the matter, as we read in Matthew 19, chapter 19, verses 4 to 6. Have you not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female? And for this cause shall a man leave father and mother, and shall cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. Wherefore they are no more twain, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 16, what, know ye not that which is joined to a harlot is one body? For two saith he shall be one flesh. And in Romans chapter 1, verse 26 and 27, God gave them up unto vile affections, for even their women did change the natural use into that which is against nature. And likewise also, men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lusts one towards another, men with men working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error which was meet. Their duty is to make decisions in equity under rules of common law, and to champion the unalienable rights of the people when lower courts violate those rights. Our founders did not trust the judiciary and accused them early on of overreaching their authority. Jefferson claimed that they twist and shape the Constitution into any form they please, and warned us of judicial despotism, and reminded us that they are as honest as other men and not more so. Judges who constantly rule in equity, consistently rule in equity courts without regard for the Constitution and American jurisprudence should be impeached for bad behavior. And any judge administrating a court of law on behalf of the King's Bench, also known as the petit jury, is to proceed as a magistrate and is not to make any rulings. And likewise, if a judge seizes authority from a jury, they too should be impeached for bad behavior and prosecuted for jury tampering. Bar esquires have infiltrated every level of government. It is near impossible to communicate with any of our government servants without finding ourselves blocked by an army of bar attorneys. And when we seek redress in our ABA hijacked courts, we are cast out of the people's once known House of Justice under the repugnant Rule 12. God will not let a corrupt government that has robbed his house rule forever. God judges justly on the earth and punishes lawless leaders and nations. Nations which forget God may completely perish. Nations which honor God and try to follow his laws, however, can expect to receive his care and protection. God has heard our prayer and has risen up a type of Cyrus that will drain the Washington swamp, and we the people will take back his house and bring all that resists to his judgment seat. Until we the people take back our stolen republic by restraining natural law and equity governed by the rules of common law in our courts, there will be no justice in American courts, and America would be lost, least until the people rise to end it. James Madison said, the people have an indubitable, an unalienable, an indefeasible right to form or change their government whenever it be found adverse or inadequate to the purposes of its institution. We, the people, agreed and codified this right in the preamble of the Declaration of Independence, when we declared, whenever any form of government becomes destructive to our rights, it is the right of the people to alter government and institute new servants. We, the people, have the unalienable right to be free, to have access to our courts of justice, and to have government by consent. As Samuel Adams said, the natural liberty of man is to be free from any superior power on earth, and not to be under the will or legislative authority of man, but only to have the law of nature for his rule. The Rules Enabling Act violates the people's unalienable right to common law rules in common law courts of record, as we read in Amendment 7. In suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of a trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. If the United States Supreme Court rejects the settling of this national emergency under the rules of natural law, then we the people include in this extraordinary presentment the removal of the justices of the United States Supreme Court. Presently, there are too many compromised congressmen and senators to start hearings of impeachment to remove judicial subverts to save our courts. We do suspect that enough people have awakened to the possible to possibly elect enough patriots in the upcoming 2026 midterm elections in both houses to start articles of impeachment to save our republic. Alternatively, we the people, being the sovereigns, considering our very republic is at stake, we the people demand that the president command the military to act and secure what these tyrants took an oath to obey, protect, and uphold, a natural law republic. Therefore, we the people demand that the United States Supreme Court do their sacred duty to secure the blessings of liberty and guarantee a republican form of government under Article 4, Subsection 4, by restoring the law of the land, opening the doors of justice, and restore the people's courts of justice, which proceeds according to the course of the natural law of the land, governed by God's rules and not man's, or resign your office for not honoring the oath that you have taken, or face the wrath of this grand jury under Article 3, Subsection 3, for warring against the Constitution and we the people. Without your obedience, there is no justice. This presentment is not a prayer. It is a demand of the sovereigns that vested you with power under Article 3, Subsection 1 and Subsection 2, whereas in the United States, sovereignty resides in people. The Congress cannot invoke the sovereign power of the people to override their will. Whereas via these repugnant acts, the Supreme Court abrogated the law of the land, replacing courts of justice with chancery courts, thereby trampling upon the Declaration of Independence, casting nature's God out of our courts, and by rule ordained judges as kings of both equity and law courts, under the will of man and not God. This compounded Congress's act of treason, forming a conspiracy between two branches of government to overthrow the will of the people, and thereby the government of the United States. Psalm 33, verse 10, 12. The Lord bringeth the counsel of the heathen to naught. He maketh the devices of the people of none effect. The counsel of Jehovah standeth forever, the thoughts of his heart to all generations. Blessed is the nation whose God is Jehovah, and the people whom he hath chosen for his own inheritance. To deny this true presentment is to deny the sovereign people as well as our Lord, and becoming willing participants in the concealment of treason in violation of USC subsection 2382. the damage done to the people and our judicial system by the aforesaid acts of the 73rd Congress and the 1938 U.S. Supreme Court is incalculable. This repugnant, subversive act shredded the United States Constitution, the law of the land, and all states' constitution. Under Article 3, Section 1, the judges, both of the Supreme Court and the inferior court, shall hold their offices during good behavior. Therefore, any judge denying the unalienable right of due process in a court of natural law is in bad behavior and must be removed. Whereas said rules covertly abrogated the laws of nature and of nature's God, the foundation of our documents, we ordained in the Declaration of Independence. It covertly abrogated our courts of justice, also known as courts of record, under natural law, and replaced it with chancery courts under civil law. It covertly abrogated due process codified by we the people under Amendment 5, placing the people under summary judgments by ALJs, more precisely, and hereinafter, chancellors. It covertly abrogated the natural law codified by we the people under Article 3, Section 2, and replaced it with civil law. It covertly abrogated suits of common law codified by we the people under Amendment 7. It covertly abrogated the king of our courts via the king's bench, namely Jesus Christ, and replaced him with chancellors. It covertly abrogated free and independent grand and petit juries, placing them under the control and the will of chancellors and prosecutors in pursuit of their ham sandwich. It covertly subjected the people to be liable to legislated commercial laws. It covertly abrogated the will of the people and replaced it with the will of chancellors. It covertly gave power to chancellors to deny a republican form of government. It covertly gave power to chancellors to deny evidence. It covertly denies the sovereignty of we the people. It covertly created and seized powers not granted to Congress or courts or the courts codified by we the people under Amendment 10. It covertly abrogated the sovereign's writ of quorum nobis. It covertly abrogated the sovereign's writs of quorum vobis. It covertly abrogated the sovereign writs of adiutor coela. It covertly abrogated the rules of natural law in both law and equity courts, placing we the people under the chancellor's rules that are applied as law, thereby removing common sense governed by the doctrines of King Jesus Christ. It covertly turned our control of our courts and the writing of repugnant rules as law to foreign entities known as the bar via the American Bar Association. It covertly abrogated the law of the land, replacing it with Roman law, also known as Babylonian law, under the name civil law via Rule 2. It covertly fundamentally altered the forms of our court. It politically motivated chancellors to covertly take powers that were not vested them, egotistically assuming these are their courts. And since Congress and the Supreme Court don't obey the Constitution, why should they, after all, they are not accountable, why, while they falsely claim they are sovereign and thereby not liable, and thereby boldly they deny jury nullification. They deny free and independent juries via jury tampering. They deny habeas corpus when that was codified by we the people via Article 1, Section 9, Clause 2. They deny citizens privileges and immunities codified by we the people via Article 4, Section 2. They abrogate freedom of religion codified by we the people via Amendment 1. They abridge freedom of speech codified by we the people via Amendment 1. They deny our right to bear arms codified by we the people via Amendment 2 to protect us from tyrants. They deny impartial juries codified by we the people via Amendment 6. They apply double jeopardy through hung juries codified by we the people via Amendment 5. They refuse to secure God's blessings of liberties, whose justice will not sleep forever, codified by we the people via the preamble. They deny our writs of quo vanto. They abrogated the fully informed, free, and independent grand jury to be orientated by the people. They abrogated the fully informed, free, and independent petit jury to be orientated by the people. They changed common law to mean judicial comedy. They provided for debtors' prison via federal tax courts controlled by foreign banksters for their unlawful tax schemes under the pretense of a fictional interpretation of Article 1 courts that does not exist. They abrogated Article 1, Section 9, Clause 4 that denied direct tax via the repugnant 16th Amendment, a repugnant law they had the power to nullify. They abrogated prayer in school, thereby denying our children the power of addressing our Heavenly Father. They abrogated the Bible in school, thereby denying the doctrines of the King of our courts, Jesus Christ, the Creator of all things. They have replaced our unalienable rights gifted by our Creator with privileges via the civil law. They transport us to jurisdictions unknown to be tried for pretended offenses. They assault innocent people with trumped-up charges and send SWAT teams to destroy people and put their families' lives in jeopardy. They maintain status quo rulings in opposition to law. They have refused the obedience to the Constitution. They sent hither swarms of officers to harass the people and eat out their substance. They have denied hidden the grand jury's 252 filings on behalf of 252 people in federal courts. And this grand jury's filings of 99 indictments ignored by federal courts and the United States Attorney General. Samuel Adams said, "The natural liberty of man is to be free from any superior power on earth and not to be under the will or legislative authority of man, but only to have the law of nature for his rule." Ordered and adjudged by we the sovereign people, author and source of law. We the sureties of the peace on behalf of all the sovereign people of the United States command the United States Supreme Court to obey the law of the land and make the following declarations ordering all federal district courts obedience to the following. Declare and order natural law the law of the land. Declare and order the reinstatement of courts of justice that proceed under natural law. Declare and order reinstatement of the rules of common law in both law and equity courts. Declare and order all federal district courts to close down the unlawful tax courts and order the release of all unlawfully held political prisoners in their debtors' prisons. Order obedience to the people's writs. Declare 28 U.S.C. subsection 2072 repugnant to the Constitution. Declare the nullification of the federal rules of criminal and civil procedures. Declare the nullification of the federal rules of evidence. Declare the nullification of chancery courts. Declare summary judgments in courts of record null and void. Declare and order that proof of jurisdiction must appear on the record. Declare and order that people have a right to free access to our courts of justice. Declare and order that people have a right to practice law in courts of law. Declare and order that the grand and petit juries are free and independent and have the right to declare to decide the facts, the law, and judgment, with an eye on restitution. Declare and order the unalienable right of the people to orientate juries. Declare the return of the King of our courts by nullifying Engle versus Vitale and Abington School District versus Shemp, cases the court had no authority to hear. Ordered and adjudged, August 26, 2026, under seal, signed by the grand jury foreman, sureties of the peace. Take judicial notice. We, the sovereign people, need no bar prosecutor to co-sign.
Okay, I know that was quite long. Most people stayed here to listen to that.
It's the thing that you sent me.
Yeah. Anyway, we can open up for a conversation. I'd like to say all right, anyway, let me see if there's anybody in. Let's see. All right, we do have a couple people.
Okay, I don't know if I'm been coming through. My mic was up. Okay, we do have a couple people in the queue. We'll take some questions or comments. Hopefully, we'll stick on this subject matter. It's extremely important we get this in. I dated this for August 26th, which is this week, and I can get it out, by August 26th or the 27th or whatever, get it out this week and get it moving. But I can't do it without money. So if people don't support this particular paper, then it doesn't get supported. And
John, can I say something?
Yeah, in a minute, though. And so this won't be done. There's nobody else out there doing this that I'm aware of. And if there is somebody else doing that, I'd like to know about it because I think we need to connect with them. But go ahead, Terry.
I want to tell you thank you for this paper. This is the paper I didn't know how to write, and you wrote it. I am amazed that you created this thing. And I hope it goes and gets accomplished all the things that it should. Thank you for doing this.
Well, I appreciate that. And, Jan has made some corrections. I made some misstatements, I can see, as I was reading along with this. And he's offered a lot of corrections, particularly on, punctuation and a few places where things were said a little odd. So it's been clarified. I'm going to reread this myself again tomorrow, make sure that there's no more corrections that need to be made, and that it does seem to go clearly in written form without being, really spoken. But anyway, let's take some questions or comments or whatever. We got a wireless call here. And again, this is not going through without the people's help. And we're not looking for millions of dollars. We're not looking for thousands of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars or tens of... We're looking for, $1,200 to do this whole thing. $1,200. Who goes to the Supreme Court for $1,200? That covers just the serving of the papers and the printing. Because there's a lot of paper, going to be a lot of paper, a lot of reams of paper to do this, and it's also going to be, of course, a lot of toner. So, in any event, it's up to you people to support this. Let's get it done. Okay, we'll take, a wireless caller, 262, area code. You've been unmuted. What's your first name and your state?
Fred, can you hear me?
Yeah, go right ahead, Brent.
Yeah, Fred from Wisconsin.
Oh, Fred, okay.
Yeah, how much did you say you needed for the papers to go out?
Well, we need about $1,200. We've got about $500 right now.
Oh, okay. Okay, so about another 1,000?
Roughly, yeah.
And do you have to get them all also printed? You need some for printing?
Oh, no, I do all the printing myself. I'm going to have to buy a box of papers, quite, I think 10 reams, and a couple of loads of toner. Toner's expensive. Anybody who deals with printers is very expensive. And then, of course, the mailing and serving. I know John is here. John, if you're still here, I do see you're in a list, and you're unmuted if you want to unmute yourself. I don't know if you're able to talk with Sheriff Dar about talking to the potential having maybe it served by either a sheriff or by a marshal.
I'll talk.
John, are you here?
Yeah, I'll talk to him.
Okay. Yeah, get back to me on that if you can, because I'd like to do it by marshal maybe, if we can.
Okay, I have one more question, John. Who did our founder fathers, or what group did they give to the We the People to arrest The ones that overpower the government, the Constitution.
Well, that's a process. Ultimately, you know, if you're looking at legislators, for instance, legislators can be impeached. If you're looking at the president or anybody in his administration, they can be impeached. If you're looking at the Supreme Court, they can be impeached. But under extraordinary situations, which is where we're at, because this is a conspiracy in the building for over 100 years, and we're at the point of the finale of this movement to destroy this republic. So there are other ways to do it. We intend on doing indictments if necessary on these people and seeing where that goes. But we're also ordering the administration, President Trump, that if all fails and we can't get this done in the normal way, then it is the right of the people to order the President of the United States, which is what we're doing now, to move forward with the military and arrest these people because they were about to lose our republic.
Okay, that's it for me. Thank you, John.
Thank you. Again, this is up on Rumble, and it's up on YouTube on our pages, and also you can read it on the front page here. You can read the presentation to SCOTUS, and you can read the cover letter. Once I make the final corrections on these two papers, and then I'll get the letter to the president out also and the administration, his administration, and I'll put that here also. Once I get those three completed, which should be in the next day or so, I'll replace these two papers and upload the other paper, which is a letter to the president, because there are some corrections that need to be made here yet. But we'll take our next caller. Let's see. It looks like Jan. You got the mic, Jan. Go right ahead.
Hi. I think the...
And you're from Wisconsin. Yep. Go right ahead.
I think you mean me. It's Jen. J-E-N. Jennifer.
You got J-A-N there, but okay, we'll change that to J-E-N.
Great. Thanks. Okay. I appreciate it. Okay, so first off, thank you. Thank you. Reiterated. Kerry works with you and has been on the path with you, I assume, for a long time. I hear him chime in sometimes. If I can offer as authentic a thank you on behalf of the people who are listening from scattered across the country, I don't know how many callers you guys get in the course of a month, but you've said before that there are 12,000 that have filled out the online, yes, I want to be a part of this. It almost feels self-indulgent to ask you about anything else, though, of course, tonight I need your counsel. Do you know what I mean? On a backdrop of what you just presented, and the loss of our republic, and an order to the president to arrest. I mean, you know, it's really getting hot, so I mean, I hesitate to bring something so mundane up on this backdrop. Anyway, I hope you can hear my thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
And know that I listen, and I pledge this evening 10% of that $700. We're church mice here in a lot of ways. I like don't have it to spare, but will, and I'll trust that the calling on my life, which started when I was a Brownie Scout, and our Brownie promise was, I promise to do my best to love God and my country, to help other people every day, especially those at home. And when a 6 or 7 year old says that, and then goes off to the public school and every day recites the Pledge of Allegiance, it sticks.
Absolutely.
Right? We're of an age where I retain that patriotic spirit and that deep sense in heart, mind, body, and soul that we're doing the right thing here. And why we're not mobbed with NLA members is beyond me, unless it's that people are overdosed on their own feed and it's saturated with the stuff that the algorithm figures they want to look at. And so it's hard to fight into that top 2 or 3 hits when you Google something, right?
Mm-hmm.
People that are getting those top hits are paying buku bucks to have that spot. So I pledge $70, and I ask you a question about, will you distinguish for me a letter that gives notice and a claim from a legal document that comes from the court, and the context is this. 22 years ago, my husband, I am second wife, divorced his wife. And the agreement included land that he got. That was predicated on him refinancing it because the mortgage was in her name. He had been a stay-at-home dad and worked to put her through school. Two children came along. He did diapers. He took care of the goats. He worked for the local dairy farmer. He's a crackerjack welder and blacksmith. Trying not to give too much narrative here, but suffice to say, here we are, 2021, five years ago, we took action, I as a paralegal of sorts, to put the property in his name, and we succeeded. We petitioned the court with an abridgment affecting real estate. The judge signed both parcels. We moved on to the Registry of Deeds and on to the property listers and the Department of Treasury to make sure that the taxes were in proper order. And we've been paying taxes on the property since the divorce. So what's in dispute was the refinancing of a mortgage, a lien on the property that she took out 5 months before the divorce for a dream kitchen.
Okay.
All right. So what we've gotten is her lawyer back in 2021, when we went through the process of putting the property in our name, appealed to the judge and caused her to vacate one of the parcels. She vacated the orders that we submitted for both parcels. She vacated one, okay, at his pressing. And the reason he said that she should vacate it was because we had cherry-picked certain aspects of the divorce judgment to lead her to believe that we were in the right. Are you with me?
I'm with you so far. Go ahead.
Okay. So then 5 years goes by. We did not respond to the vacate order. We let that sleeping dog lie, so to speak. I checked my papers, and I noticed that in my amateur pro se sort of legal assistance, you've mentioned prima facie before, prima facie, and that a clerk doesn't go looking under the top sheet. Everything on the top sheet should indicate what's under it, correct?
Well, that's correct, but, you know, things have changed as of August 5th with the order from Justice Roberts that anybody coming in with a petition, okay, under the First Amendment, they can't apply the rules. But when you take that to the further extent of that, the rules can't be applied anyway. You know, here's the problem, and I understand their position, and it makes a little sense. Look, if they reject it for a rule, that means it's not prima facie. And that could be the only rule. That could be the only thing. And they could send it back to you, say, look, it's not prima facie. Here's your errors. Here's the mistakes. This is what you need to do. Go here and read this rule on this and this rule on that, and then reapply. That they can do kind of makes some sense.
Okay.
I do understand certain things, like they like the double space. They like a certain font. They like a certain size font. They like a certain size font on your footnotes.
Yep.
And when you talk about that, they do a lot of reading. So, again, I can appreciate that, too.
Sure.
I also come to the appreciation of their 40-page limit. I was upset with that. I didn't like that. But, you know, as I've been putting this together, I found that less was more. So I kind of agree with the 40-page, you know, minimum. Your exhibits don't have to count, though. You can have 500 pages of exhibits, you know.
Oh, okay.
But it's just the main part of the paper. But go ahead.
Okay. So in this case, the cover sheet, if you will, the prima facie, was the actual form that the state of Wisconsin offers to address this particular situation, an abridgment to a divorce agreement affecting title to real estate. And it was the right form, quite certain of that. However, on the top page, I didn't put both parcels. I assumed that I should make one parcel and a packet and then a second parcel. Regardless of the fact that they were identical, they were different parcels. So I packed up both parcels with the top sheet indicating parcel one. And I assumed that the clerk would say, well, okay, and then under that is parcel two. I said that to her at the window.
Let me just stop you for a second. You used the word assume something, and I understand that. Yeah. And you know what that means. Look at it, it's very specific. It's line upon line, precept upon precept. That's the way it's supposed to be. Law is constructive. One point after another point after another point. If you're going through A, B, C, and you're making the statements on A and B and C, if you leave out B, you have a deficiency. So that's kind of problematic for you, but go ahead.
All right. I owned it, and I immediately addressed it. I was courteous. I was direct and thorough, and
You corrected it very quickly?
Yeah. Listen, I got on the phone with her clerk, the judge's clerk, and I think there's a distinction between the clerk for the judge versus the clerk of court that's taking papers at the window. And mind you, again, this was 2021, before all of this stuff was uploaded into electronic filing. Okay, we were still bringing papers to the courthouse. So I immediately said, whoa, let me fix that. And I communicated with the clerk for the judge and faxed her as swiftly as possible the other parcel. And it landed at the same time, the same day that the ex-wife's attorney lodged his vacate that order direction or a motion. And so what the judge received that day was my tidy packet of the second parcel in completely proper order. And the first parcel, which was incomplete, was vacated. This is tough to call. In the interim, before the vacated order was said to that I had cherry picked certain aspects of the divorce judgment, namely point one, and that was that my husband received the property in a line. It said sole possession shall go to the respondent, the petitioner being his ex-wife. And rather than take the entire paragraph of that, I simply took the pertinent statement from it. The lawyer looked at it and said, that's a cherry pick. She excluded the rest of that paragraph. The rest of that paragraph was the details of getting her name off the mortgage, because she was the one that was put through school and got a great job and ended up with an automatic withdrawal bank account that went straight to the mortgage company, whereas my husband has been working for cash and has been in a grinding labor world, not with a diploma and not with automatic withdrawals and deposits from an employer, etc., works his butt off, okay, and is a talented man. So it made sense in the course of their marriage that she was the bank person. And so the automatic withdrawals continued to come from her account to the mortgage payment, and he continued to give her the cash monthly.
Sure.
Between 2002 and 2011, at which point the mortgage was paid and the deed was recorded and the mortgage no longer exists. So from 2011 to 2021, 10 years, we sat on it and we finally said, look, there's no lien on the property. It says plainly in the divorce judgment, he got the property. We're going to go ahead and put these in our name. We've been paying the taxes the entire way. And he paid her every month, cash. He's a man of his word. He didn't get a receipt from her. She didn't give him a bill. He's a common law guy whose word is his bond. And my question this evening is, how do I react to this letter dated July 20th, 2026, from a new set of from a new law office, because the former lawyer died, and it is a notification that they are representing my husband's ex-spouse, and that the actions that we took in 2021 to secure the property and gain title cherry picked, and that they will bring. Let me just give you their charge. We advised her to bring a contempt motion and a slander of title claim against you for your assertion of sole ownership in contrast, or in contradiction to the plain terms of the divorce judgment. And secondly, we've advised her she has a meritorious claim for equitable subrogation to the mortgage bank against the property, resulting in $108,000 her way, and that he can stay on the land until he dies, after which time she gets it all, which means nothing for the two children that came of his. I get it. I'm saying too much. Are you still with me?
Yeah, there's a lot of information I really don't need here that you're giving me. But let's go back to the first statement you made concerning the sole ownership or the sole something. What was, read that again?
Okay.
And you cherry picked out of that. Read that again, though.
You mean the divorce judgment itself, the paragraph that I sent attached to the abridgment.
Right. And then they claimed that you had you cherry picked it or something. But go ahead, read that sentence of two or three, whatever it is.
Okay, one moment, please. Grabbing it. Thank you for your patience. All right. Property division. Part A, the petitioner is awarded personal property, household furniture, etc. The respondent also is awarded personal property, household furniture. Part C, residence. The respondent shall be awarded all right, title, and interest in the residence of the parties located at such and such address here in Wisconsin, and the petitioner shall be divested of all right, title, and interest therein and saved harmless from any liability thereon. Okay?
Okay.
The respondent, my husband, shall refinance the mortgage on said property within 3 months to remove the petitioner's name as an obligor on said debt.
Did he do that?
That's the sentence that I neglected to include.
Okay. How long has it been? Did he do that, though?
Okay. So the divorce was in 2002, and we were in 2021.
Did he refinance it?
No, he paid her cash monthly until it was paid off in 2011.
So that okay, that's fine. Well, look, it's called an error. People make errors all the time. People misprint something, misstate something, miswrite something.
Yes, okay.
So that happens all the time. So you just have to do a correction. You write a paper and file it in that you want to make a correction on what you have filed before, that there was an error, and then put the whole statement in there and make the point. You should be able to just a page or two or three, you know.
John, I did that in the midst of it. As I said, because the two parcels went to the clerk initially.
What happened with that when you did that?
So I submitted the second parcel with the three pages attached. Then the vacate notification came to us. And in the midst of it, I mean, it's like a nexus of activity. I was on the phone with the clerk to the judge at our local library, faxing her the second parcel with all three pages, and I said, shall I also include the first parcel? It only had that single page. And she said, no, that's okay. We have that one. And I was a little confused, but what happened is her lawyer literally filled it out and gave it to them, and the judge signed it and stamped it.
Well, right there, an affidavit should clean that up. And
okay, an affidavit, right.
For an error and correcting that error, and then making the note of it that you were not just picking this and that and leaving this or that. This is an error. And then and you do it in affidavit form. Remember this one thing: an affidavit unrebutted rules the court. So once you make that affidavit, they got to rebut it. And it doesn't. And he may make an argument or a debate or something. And here's something. And again, it doesn't hold too much in court, but it should. And you could probably make a position on this. And that is that when you do something by affidavit personally, the individual involved, and the other side does it through their lawyer, that's ultimately, that's secondhand information, and that's not affidavit at all. And that you're going to make that point if they respond from that perspective. At least that's another, sort of feather in your cap to put into your thing to try to get your position, you know, for the court to agree on your position, your thinking, your conclusions.
Would you go so far as to say that it's hearsay from a lawyer?
Personally, yeah, I would, of course. Look, it's not an affidavit. They can't make a sworn statement. What they're doing is protecting someone by them doing it and say, oh, I just made an error. I misunderstood. There's nobody to hold, okay? And it's got to be – now, they do it all day long, okay? And they permit this in the courts all day long, okay? It may not get through, but it should get through. In a court of law, it would get through, okay? Because, again, it's secondhand information. It's hearsay, no matter what you do. And you can't trust these lawyers anyway. They lie. You know, there's a lot of jokes out of it. How do you know if a lawyer's lying? Their lips are moving. I mean, it's so true because that's what they do. I've been in court so many times, and they say the most horrible, destructive, and twisting things about it's unbelievable what they say.
Yeah, you know? I agree. Okay, so one last question. What do I call this correspondence that came from her law office? It's not a notice and demand, right? That would be a court document.
Well, if it was a notice and demand, it would state that it's a notice and demand. It would be an affidavit form, and it would be put forth
the
demand.
It's a letter. It's a letter.
Yeah, it's just all it is. It's just a letter. A letter to me is meaningless. Look, a letter is a letter. An affidavit is an affidavit. You could do a letter in affidavit form. I mean, it would be an affidavit then because it's an affidavit. You're swearing to it. So, again, I would respond in making the point of the original quotations that you should have put in. I would put that together and make that point where you put this in and you should have put that in. And if there was a misunderstanding by talking with the clerk or something, maybe you could add that in. And they had certain information they said they didn't need. You might want to add that in. I don't know. You know, I don't know all the details there. Right. But the bottom line is what you have to do. You talk about it being an error, and you want to make the fact that this is an affidavit, a sworn statement. Okay. But with that, if we want to get any deeper, let's do it next week because we're late and they got one more person.
I hear it. You're so smart and you're so driven, and I just applaud who you are and the organization that you're building. Trust that it will grow.
I hope so.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Okay, we'll take our last caller here. Charles, you got the mic. Go right ahead. We are going a little, but we'll try to cut it soon, but we'll see where we go. Go ahead, Charles. What state you're from?
Delaware County, Oklahoma.
Oklahoma. Okay, Charles from Oklahoma.
Yes. The question I have is, how much money do you need?
Well, we need $1,200 altogether, I figure, and we've got about $500.
So I can give you
$300. Dave,
how do I do that?
Get it. Well, you can go just make the donation up on the top right side of a website. It says Donate Now, and if you click on that donation tab, you go to a page where, you know, you can do it a couple of different ways. You could do it through a credit card. And you can do it through the mail.
I'll do it through a credit card. And will you ensure that it goes to this paper?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, look, when you get down to do this and you go to and you do a donation, you do a one-time donation for whatever amount you want to give. And on the bottom there'll be a comment there. You can put a comment in. You can put it for the purpose of the paper going to the Supreme Court for SCOTUS.
Yes, I'll do that.
All right, I appreciate anything.
Are you familiar with an organization called Tactical Civics?
I'm somewhat familiar with it. I'm trying to remember. I think we tried to have conversation with those people, I think. Jan, are you still here? Do you remember, or Terry, if we've had connection with Tactical Civics and if there was, you know, what that was about?
Yeah.
We did have a connection with them. Do you remember what happened?
Hold on a second, John. I got to get my volume up to where I can hear better.
Okay. All right, while we're waiting for Jan to do that, anything else you want to bring up, Charles?
Are there any court cases that support constitutional grand jury in each county? standing constitutional grand jury in each county?
It's in the Bill of Rights. You find the grand jury in there. It's not as you know, the U.S. versus Williams. We read part of that within our paperwork there. It gets into some detail concerning that, that it's separate from, it's not part of any of the three powers. It's separate, and it's the people themselves. And if you go back into history, in common, under common law, of course, it was the people that pulled together the grand jury. Bar attorneys didn't do that, okay? They should operate under the auspices of the court, but if you can't get into the courthouse, we have to set a tent up outside the court, so to speak, and operate as we can. One of the things we're doing is we're trying to build administrators, grand and petit juries, because you see right now every county has a group of lawyers that go through that whole process. No, that has to be given to the people. They have to be disconnected from the bar attorneys particularly, okay, and it has to be the people, free and independent people. So we have to get administrators in there. We're looking to reset that up in every county. That would be a professional position. It would be a full-time position. We even make note of that concerning that when people join, if they want to take on that kind of a job and, you know, and make a and start taking the courses to fill those positions, in the hope and belief that we will eventually get there. But meanwhile, we have to be prepared for that. But the thing is that you can't let the fox take care of the hen house. It has to be by the people. And they have to. We have to make free and independent grand juries. They make juries that are imprisoned by statutes, and that's a problem. We can't allow these. That's jury tampering, as a matter of fact. Okay.
Yes, sir. We understand that. Thank you.
And when the judge says, jury, you know, you get to decide the facts and this, that, or the other thing, I'll take care of the law. I'll figure out the law. You have to do the law the way I tell you. Well, that's jury tampering also. You know, the people are supposed to not only get to decide the facts, but also the law and the consequence, whatever the penalty might be, with an eye on restitution. People don't get restored in courts. You know, who gets the money if there's a fine given or anything? The state gets it. What's that all about? You take the person in, they bring forth the complaint against what was done to them in a criminal case, and then they're thrown out of the court. Thank you very much. Now we'll find a guilty plea. We'll put this person in jail. We'll make some money off of it, and see you later. Goodbye. This all has to change around. It's got to go back to the people. The way it was, it always was the people. Got to go back to the people. We need to orientate the jury. We even wrote a handbook on how to orientate the juries, both petit and the grand. But you can't put forward a grand jury that's in session forever. Now, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury has been in session for quite a few years, but we only have one focus. We're not going outside that focus. In order to go to another thing, we have to open up another grand jury hearing and go into something else. But right now, our focus is on subversion against the United States of America, and we'll be in hearing and in focusing in and writing on these things and filing on these things, everything necessary until we can try to get our courts of justice back.
Okay, John.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you had a question.
Yeah, what was the name of that group, Charles?
Tactical Civics.
Yeah, didn't we had some connection with them somehow in the past. Do you remember
David Zuniga?
Do you remember that, Dan?
Are they the group that has in their charter they cannot work with anyone else?
That may have been in. I was thinking that too, but I don't remember. I remember there was a group. It might have been them. And if it is, then, yeah, they won't work with us because they only doing their own thing. And sometimes we're not compatible with other groups. You know, they might want to work with us. We're going to have differences. That's okay. But they can't be major differences, you know.
You know, but one of the difficulties that the Lord has explained is pride. And pride is a prison for the person who is in it and for the people that support it.
Absolutely. Correction is grievous to those who have forsaken the way.
Amen.
True, of course, it's a biblical statement, and it's true about the truth, of course, but it's true about anything, really. It's a principle. All right, anything else, Charles?
No, thank you, sir.
Okay, I appreciate the call. Thank you. All right, well, we're done for the night. Wardwin will be back next Monday. And again, you know, if you can, try to get this video. It's up both up on Rumble and it's up on YouTube. You can find us on the right-hand side of our website. We do have a link that gets you to Rumble and it gets you to YouTube. And you can find this particular paper we read up there. You can also take the paper and put a link to take the link off this paper on our front page and share that in chats or whatever. But we need to get the word out. We need to get the people to look at these things. I think the video is reasonably powerful, and if people will sit through the video, it's kind of long. I think it's about 50 minutes. So, all right, with that, good night, everybody. Thanks for coming. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. Good night.